Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Later in the hour, we discuss Provincetown's decision to replace First Light fireworks with a lighted drone show and the series of first day hikes taking place on January 1. But first, driving along Route 6A in Sandwich this time of year, you'll be rewarded with lighted giant sculptures. Joining us is the creator of the giants, sculptor and glassblower Michael Magyar. Hi, welcome.
Good morning.
So the number of giants seem to grow every year. How many are there now?
I believe there's 159.
Wow. So what was the first giant?
Well, the first giant was a glass blower. I did something really simple. I just did the typical glass blower pose. And we put them out front. And 5 years later, I did the baseball card guy. He was a baseball card dealer down the street. He has since moved, and his giant got actually traded to Orleans.
Oh,
Reds.
Wow. So they're not just in Sandwich.
Oh, no. Orleans has, I think, 5 or 6.
Wow.
There's one in Merriam. There's a few off Cape, a couple in Barnstable, a couple in Dennis. That was 5 years after I made mine. I made the baseball, Ted Williams. And then 3 years after that, I made Titcom's bookstore. So in 8 years, there were 3 of them within, you could really look at them right there. They're very close. Then that's when I had the idea, like, oh, what if, if I made more?
Yeah. So talk about the process of this. You get an idea, like the glass blower or the baseball player. Talk us through that, the design and then the fabrication. How does that all come together?
Well, usually, people come to me and they're interested. So what I do is I ask for an image. Like, some of them say I want a whale, but what kind of image of a whale, breaching or, whatever. So they give me an image of what they like. And then I will do a pencil sketch of it. And they approve that sketch once it's all been, we change things sometimes, whatever happens. But once it's all approved and they like it, I'll go ahead and weld the rebar and round stock, half inch round stock metal, bend it and weld it all together to their design. And then we sometimes they'll pick them up or we deliver them and then they do the lighting.
Mm. So have there been any particularly challenging designs?
Oh, yes. Sometimes, I did the carousel horse for Heritage Museum Gardens. That was very challenging. Or the knight for the high school. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was, the only straight line was the lance. Everything else was curved.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But, you just kind of plug away at it. I have a piece of chalk that I sketch it out on my concrete pad. And then basically you start bending the metal to fit those lines.
It sounds, it's not as easy as it sounds. Bending the metal sounds kind of hard.
Well, I have a big vise and I don't usually use heat, to heat up the metal.
Wow.
Very seldom do I, if I have to make a real tight point or something, but usually it's all done cold.
Wow. And you mentioned the lighting. How are they lighted? And is that a design you came up with as well?
No, it's just a typical Christmas display, holiday display of, you follow the line with the lights. The hard part, is knowing how many lights you have, but you have a drawing that's scale, half inch to a foot. So you can kind of get close. I say always buy extra. The hard part's how do you end it? Like you're going up the leg, let's say, and you have to go up to the body, but you have to come back to the other leg or the arm. And sometimes you just say, okay, I'm going to end it in the chest area. I'm going to eat up all my extra lights there. And that's what I tell people, just have a little extra so you can finish maybe in the hair or the chest, or maybe just fill the pants up with extra mm-hmm. lights. But it's often a big learning curve. I've seen them go up the first year and then as the years progress, they just get better and better,
Yeah. It's funny because I didn't realize that they were just Christmas lights. They kind of have this like neon look to them. I always thought that this was, some special kind of lighting.
Well, I mean, lights have come a long way.
Yeah.
LEDs and then the rope lighting. Rope lighting has gotten really thin and very bright.
Mm.
So there's a lot of new stuff. People ask me what's best. I go, every year there's something better.
Yeah. So the Giants are not all holiday themed, as you're mentioning. So you have some that are the holiday and then these others that are just what people have asked you to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did a kangaroo because they're from Australia. I did a palm tree because, you know, they like people like Florida. Palm tree with Christmas ornaments on it, you know. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, every now and then I have to say, well, you know, like somebody wanted a bottle, a wine bottle and a glass. I'm like, well, that's not really holiday enough. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just do advertisement for a liquor store or whatever it was, you know? So I suggested maybe a guy carrying a basket full of, you know, wine and bread and cheese and call it holiday treats. Mm-hmm. To go back to the, you know, the idea of a giant doing something.
Yeah.
And you know, there's been no really big problem. You know, people like the idea sometimes I'm in the middle of a giant and I'm like, oh, well, this would look better. And I talked to the owner and say, what about like Sotheby's was a big giant that actually recycled from the Lady Justice who, you know, retired and moved on. So she couldn't use it. Sotheby's at 6A and Jarvis Street took it over and I reconfigured it to a woman with a briefcase and her hand out holding a house, you know, representing a house. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be a sold sign initially. I actually made the sold sign. And I'm like, you know, this is no good. You can only read it on one side. And I thought of the house, you know, so that worked out really well. So sometimes in the midst of something, you say, well, you know, maybe this would be better. But usually it's pretty straightforward right from the beginning. Okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, it's approved.
And why just the holidays? Why not year round?
Well, you know, I really have to tell people you can't have them lit on 6A all year. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a historical road. And it becomes signage if it's all year. Where if it's a holiday display, it kind of, you know, you don't need a permit. You don't need historical approval. It's temporary. That's what it falls into. Right. If it becomes a permanent structure and lit up all year, some people leave them up all year, but they don't light them. And you don't even notice them. Mm-hmm. They look like sticks, you know, on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So I have to tell people, you know, you can't light them all year. If it's a birthday, a celebration, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But you can't really leave them lit all year because they won't be as special either for the holidays.
Yeah. All right. What are some of your favorites that you've done?
Oh, gosh. Well, Peter Rabbit, the Thornton Burgess Society, they did really well with their lighting. And the power reader at the library is really neat. I did a pizza guy, sandwich pizza last year, and they did a really nice job lighting it. And they had this design already thought out and everything. So that was a real simple one. Mm-hmm. And I love Old Man Winter at the weather store because that was only... That's like, I think the only giant I could actually do features, you know, usually the face is only like a foot big or, you know, or 2 feet big, but you know, you don't get really detail and that's tough when you light them. It has to be kind of, you try to get detail, unless you do really specific, it all becomes jumbled. You don't really see the features as much.
And so they're up now, but are you working on any new designs at the moment?
No, well, I am. The Oars restaurant, the Tapas Bar in Sandwich and Merchant Square. I actually talked to her today on making a small one for the front of her establishment. I think it's number 6 Merchant Square. It's kind of a tapas Greek bar.
Yeah.
So we're working on a design of like a woman with a vine and a glass coming out of her hand or something. I gotta work on it.
So they can be different sizes then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. From 10 feet to 20 feet. Mm. I think the tallest one was, I think it was the First Night Lighthouse, which was 23 feet, I think, 24 feet.
And how does one go about getting a giant? They just give you a call? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. People inquire about him, and I always, you know, come back and say, well, you know, give me an image of what you like, and then we go from there.
Are they expensive?
They run from, you know, $1,200 to $2,200.
Oh, okay. And, you know, Sandwich has such a rich history of glass blowing. What originally drew you to the Cape?
Well, really, it was we're going to build a studio in Boston, and this is 1992. And my good friend and partner, Chioji Asahara, who I met out in graduate school when I was going to school in California College of Arts and Crafts, he came and did a demonstration. We became really good friends. So we decided he wanted me to build a studio for him in Boston. And that was 82. And in 92, we built this studio. So it took us 10 years of, we saw each other every year. I went to Japan for 3 years and worked in his studio, had three one-man exhibitions. I finished my Master of Fine Arts in New Orleans at Tulane University, and he would love to come down and do a little demonstration and see New Orleans. So he did that every year. And then finally in 92, we looked around and Boston was so expensive, so we decided to come on the Cape. And I didn't want to set up in Sandwich because of the history of glass. It's kind of silly, but I was like, oh, I'm not gonna do there, And we looked all over the Cape, and I had 2 weeks. I was living in Japan, and it was all done by mail. There was no internet. We had everything was by letter. So I had a stack of listings. And 92, it was the economy was pretty bad, and the housing market was really low. And at the last couple of days, after 2 weeks, we couldn't find anything perfect. And I decided to look in Sandwich. And I looked at this house. It was bank owned, repossessed. It was 2 years on the market. The bank really wanted to get rid of it. And it was just the right time.
Yeah, just meant to be, right?
Yeah. And guys, I always say Sandwich kind of found me,
Yeah. You're not getting away. All right. So these giant lighted sculptures, as you mentioned, they're not just on 6A. They're throughout the town. Some are spotted elsewhere on the Cape, like you're mentioning, Orleans and Barnstable. Do you have a list or a map of where all these giants are located?
The Sandwich Chamber of Commerce has they put out a map every year online. So I looked at that last night actually, and it's a little old. It needs to be updated. So I don't know if they're working on that or not, but usually online you can get a map. The current issue of Cape Cod Life magazine, they have a little map. They did an article. They have a little map of downtown Sandwich, like 6A. But online, there's a really big map. It's a little hard. Some of them are gone because people move on, and sometimes I'll redo them. But there's a pretty good map from the Chamber of Commerce, Sandwich Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. How long are they up usually?
That really varies. Sometimes, the first week or second week in January, that people, turn them off, and other times it's May, and I'm like, hey. Holidays are over,
Gotta take it
I know you
down.
want to keep them lit, but it's May. Someone said, well, his is on, and
Yeah.
well, how come I can't leave mine on? So I'm like,
Yeah.
okay, listen, it's holiday, we can't leave them lit all year on like 6A. If you were a residential area and a cul-de-sac, no one, that's would be your option. You can leave it lit all year, if your neighbors don't complain. But on 6A, it's kind of special. It's a really
Yeah.
beautiful road, and I think it just makes the holidays even more important when they, when the giants come out on the holiday season. So they
Yeah.
vary a lot on when
Yeah.
they go off. And if it rains, most of them are ground fault protectors, so it's terrible. So inevitably, most of them go off, and when it rains, because the ground fault protectors, click and they turn off the electricity just for the slightest little breach of contact.
Oh. Well, we know the holidays, people love to look at the lights. So as people are heading to Heritage to see Gardens Aglow, drive
Yes.
around Sandwich, take a look at all these great giants. They're so fun. They're just very whimsical and so fun to
Well, I think
see.
everyone puts a lot of energy to make it happen.
Yeah. Michael Magyar is a sculptor and a glassblower whose giant lighted sculptures can be seen in Sandwich and elsewhere on the Cape. And we'll post a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. And have a wonderful holiday.
You too. Coming up after a break, an alternative to fireworks at community celebrations. You're listening to The Point. Towns across the region plan first night or first light celebrations to bring in the new year. Fireworks have long been part of those celebrations, but with growing concerns about the adverse impacts of fireworks, many communities are shelving fireworks for other light displays. Joining us to talk about what the town of Provincetown is planning in lieu of fireworks this year is Dan Ravello. He's the assistant town manager in Provincetown. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So in the past, Provincetown has displayed fireworks around New Year's celebrations. So what prompted the town to rethink that?
We've been doing fireworks for the last few years, less than 10, for our first light celebration for New Year's. And a couple years ago at town meeting, we had some residents bring a citizen petition to switch to low noise fireworks. And that petition passed overwhelmingly. And so for the last couple of years, for both our New Year's Eve and our 4th of July fireworks, we've been using the so-called low noise fireworks, which, you know, they really look and sound mostly like a regular fireworks show, but they sort of take out those big concussive booms that can really bother folks and animals. But we thought this was a really great opportunity to try something new. We've seen drone shows really advance in technology over the last couple of years. And so we started looking at it a few years ago, and it was sort of cost prohibitive, but costs have come down. And so we really want to give it a go this year. And we think it's going to be a really fun and exciting new thing to be able to experience on New Year's.
I never heard of low noise fireworks before. Also, there are a number of chemicals used in fireworks to create the colors when the fireworks explode. And those chemicals are released into the air and later end up in water and soil. And one of those chemicals is perchlorate, something we found in drinking water on the Cape. We weren't able to get a scientist studying the impacts of firework chemicals on the show today, but we'll link to an article from earth.org that covers this topic much more in depth. So there's that chemical pollution from fireworks, but there's also that impact of noise on wildlife. And obviously you had folks coming to town meeting who were worried about the noise. So that was a big factor then in the town's decision, the noise?
Yeah, the noise and the effects that it have on animals, general environmental impacts, and also the impacts that fireworks can have on folks with PTSD.
Right.
So, town meeting voted overwhelmingly to go with the low noise fireworks a couple years ago. And that's why we think the drone show is just a natural evolution of sort of the spirit of that, because there's no noise whatsoever. So it won't impact the environment. It won't impact animals. It won't impact our harbor. And it won't impact folks who may suffer from PTSD. Plus, it's going to look really, really cool.
Yeah, so the noise of the cheering crowd, right?
Yes, exactly.
And for those of us with dogs, we know, man, fireworks.
Yes.
In the past years, the town of Barnstable's had to delay their 4th of July fireworks because of nesting piping plovers.
Right.
This is especially, of course, this is a dark time of the year. Light celebrations can really lift us up. So you're mentioning this drone show. Tell us what that is for folks who have not heard of it before.
Sure. So it's these little drones that are able to be synchronized with lights, and they synchronize them in different patterns and designs in the sky. It's going to be about 15 minutes long, which was the length of our previous New Year's Eve fireworks. And it's going to be, sort of holiday Cape themed. So think of those types of designs when you are thinking about coming to see the show. And we think it's going to be a really family-friendly event. You know, people can see fireworks oftentimes in different places or different times of the year. But as far as I know, we're going to be the only drone show on Cape Cod for New Year's Eve. So we really hope that that'll bring people to town to experience it. With the earlier start time of 6 p.m., we really hope that it's a really great option for families or people after work who may have later New Year's Eve plans to be able to come to town, see the show, and then get on with their other plans.
Mm, sounds great. Have you seen a drone light performance before? Have you seen one?
I've never personally seen one, but I have watched a lot of videos of the company that's going to be producing it for us, and it looks really spectacular. And I think the fact that it's going to be over Provincetown Harbor, I think it's just going to be beautiful against our natural backdrop.
I have not seen it in person either, but I've also seen those videos. And we know anytime you see those videos, look, they're never as good as what it looks like in real life, right?
That's what we're hoping for.
All right. So we mentioned fireworks can be seen and heard from miles away. Will folks still be able to enjoy the drone light show from a distance?
Yeah, so they said we should have a pretty clear view for about 2 to 3 miles. Again, going to depend on the weather. You never know what
Right.
you're going to have out here at the tip of the Cape on New Year's Eve. So we're hoping for a clear, not windy night. But the drone show itself will be about 300 to 400 feet in the air and about 200 to 300 feet wide. So it will be quite large. So we think really anywhere in town, you'll be able to get a good view of it. But, you know, since it is right over the harbor and we have our main parking lot there and the pier, we're really inviting people to come to the center of town because that will be the best, closest viewing spot you get. We're also working with our local Provincetown Community Television Station, who's going to be filming and live streaming the event. So if it ends up being too cold or people don't want or can't leave their homes, they'll be able to watch it on PTV that night. And, you know, since fireworks have some noise associated with them and the drone show is quiet, we're partnering with Cape Cod X to live stream music to go along with the drone show at the same time. So if people are in their cars or if they're out on the pier, we're going to have speakers. You can tune into the station and hear the music that goes along with the drones.
Yeah, sounds like fun. So now has Provincetown done away with fireworks completely for the townwide celebrations, including 4th of July, or is this like a test?
This is sort of a pilot. We're not getting rid of the 4th of July fireworks just yet. That's a little bit bigger of a lift. And, you know, people sort of expect fireworks on the 4th of July. So really, we're just transitioning our New Year's Eve first light celebration to be a drone show. And we'll see what kind of feedback we get from folks and residents, and we'll go from there.
All right. So what are some of the other first night events that are planned in town?
So there's lots of different things. You know, this time of year on the Cape, a lot of things are closed, but we have a lot of restaurants that are still open in Provincetown. So make a dinner reservation before or after the drone show. We're working with local businesses along Commercial Street to host viewing parties for the drone show. So a lot of that will be published online in the coming weeks. And then, of course, you know, the Provincetown Business Guild has a whole list of events for First Light that night and then, you know, into the weekend that'll be happening across town.
We'll post a link with more information about Provincetown's Drone Light Show, along with an article from Earth.org about the environmental impacts of fireworks at our website, capeandislands.org. Dan Ravello, Assistant Town Manager in Provincetown, thanks for being with us. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, and we hope people make the trip to P-Town on New Year's Eve.
Coming up after break, we'll talk about the tradition of first day hikes on Cape Cod. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. One of the things that makes the Cape and Island so special is the natural beauty. From sand plain grasslands to beaches, pine oak woodlands to kettle ponds, and we have a diversity of habitats. And we're fortunate to have many of those places protected from development and open for our enjoyment. Now in its fifth year, First Day Hikes is a way to get out and enjoy our conservation lands. And joining us to talk about the First Day Hikes for 2026, we welcome Sue Sullivan back to the show. Sue is the Director of Communications at the Barnstable Land Trust. Hi.
Hi.
All right. So you started this 5 years ago.
I did.
Hikes. Where did you get that idea from?
So I had followed it happening in state parks across the country and thought, oh, I wonder if other parks and trails are participating. So I reached out to the American Hiking Association and said, you know, are there regional collaborations? Have you trademarked the name? And they were like, go for it. No, this is just state parks. So we labeled it First Day Hikes Cape Cod. So it's a unique collaboration across the Cape Cod region. And we started with like 10 organizations and maybe 10 hikes. And this year, I can't believe it's 5 years. We have over 18 programs and 18 nonprofit collaborators.
So now 18 hikes or more?
18 hikes.
18
or
hikes.
Programs, yeah. I would call events.
So are there first day hikes offered? It's just throughout this region. Does it include the islands or is it just the Cape?
It's right now. It's just the Cape.
But the idea, you'd like to include the
The more the merrier.
Yeah. All right. So this might be a great opportunity to visit another region, right, for a first day hike, perhaps explore a new place. As you look over the list of first day hikes, what would you recommend for the lower Outer Cape area?
The lower Outer Cape. So we're talking Chatham?
Yeah, Wellfleet.
Wellfleet. Okay. So yeah. We actually have programs ranging from P-Town all the way to Wareham. This year, our bonus in celebrating the 5th anniversary will be in P-Town on January 2nd, okay, where you can do a tree ID and lichen walk, which is, I've gone on this walk with this program host before, and it's fascinating. You'll never look at trees the same. And winter's a great time to do it. Wellfleet will be looking at the Gut with Friends of Herring River and Wellfleet Conservation, another really wonderful opportunity to learn about some of the conservation efforts, but also to enjoy the natural beauty at a time when there aren't as many people around and plenty of wildlife. So,
yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the lichen, and I'll mention Nantucket. I went on a walk, and, you know, there's a lot of lichen in some of those areas. And it almost, you know, when the light hits it a certain way, that sort of greenish tinge, it almost looks like you're in Emerald City or something. I don't know.
Absolutely.
It's so beautiful.
It's magical.
Yeah, it is. It's like you're in a magical world for sure. Yeah. So you mentioned Wellfleet and Provincetown. The other thing, too, and I know this isn't part of an organized hike, but it's always a nice hike to go out that old fire trail out to the Race Point Lighthouse, because you never know what you're going to see off of Race Point with, you know, the birds and right whales. That's a great place to look at right whales.
Yep.
And I would say for folks maybe who can't make that kind of a hike, go to Herring Cove. You can sit in your car and watch
Absolutely.
It from there. Yeah.
I've done that, and, you know, 1 year saw the whales right from the car. I'm like, oh, my God, this is insane.
I know. It is crazy. All right, so let's hear a comment about favorite hikes from our listener line. Take a listen.
Hi, my name is Sam O'Neill. I'm the land stewardship technician at the Orleans Conservation Trust. My favorite winter hike on an Orleans Conservation Trust property has got to be the trail system at our Ice House and Rubens Ponds Conservation Area. Walking the trails, you'll experience a beautiful pitch pine oak woodland, but if you take your first right turn after the trailhead, you'll find yourself in a grove of fir trees. In the wintertime, particularly after a fresh snowfall, this fir grove is quiet and peaceful, and I hope it doesn't sound too corny to say that it feels like walking in a winter wonderland. You can find all the information you need to visit the Ice House and Rubens Ponds Conservation Area on OrleansConservationTrust.org. Happy hiking, everyone.
Oh, that's great. You know, it's interesting, too, when you hear of these different spots. People have a tendency to sort of just stick around in the town they live, right? And there are so many great places if you just do a little bit of, you know, venturing out there, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we hope First Day Hikes encourages people to do, is to actually either discover new places in their town, but more ideally is to cross over town lines. And, you know, First Day Hikes is mostly program with guided walks, but there's also tons of trails that you can explore on your own. So it, I think we are going to be working with the Cape Cod Commission, which I know you had on earlier with the Cape Cod Inventory of Outdoor Recreation. And I think it's going to uncover even more than people realize that we have at our fingertips.
How many times did you hear, I didn't know that?
Yeah.
All right, so I saw that there was a first day hike in Harwich that will incorporate Qigong. What is that?
It's one of those meditative kind of hikes where you'll explore your nature and how it appeals to the senses. We actually have two sort of, I would call, mindful hikes. Arenda Wildlife Trust is also offering one of those that will explore the Great Marsh. And Harwich does a great job of offering this program in particular throughout the year.
Boy, talk about, you feel a little stressed, that's what you need.
Absolutely.
Not only the walk, but you get that cold meditative kind of calming, if you will, right?
And both of those happen in the afternoon. So if you want to sleep in after your New Year's celebration, you can still start the New Year's off with sense of calm.
And then there's a sunrise hike in Chatham for early risers, right?
Yep. And this is a new one being offered. We're very excited to be working with the team in Chatham and to look at the beauty of the first light, especially from that part of the Cape. Yeah. And I think it's 6:45.
Mm-hmm. Not too early.
Right? No, yeah. No. Yeah. And we used to, last year, Barnstable Land Trust, for the last few years, has offered a sunrise hike at Sandy Neck Beach. But with all the work being done on the parking lot, we decided to move inland this year. So, and a little later, 7:30.
Now, have you been on most of these hikes that you're putting together here, or no?
No, I never get to go to any of them.
Because you're too busy putting it all together.
I run the Barnstable Land Trust does one event called First Day Fun at Fuller Farm. And it has become so popular. Last year, we had over 200 people in less than 2 hours.
My goodness.
But it's tons of fun. So where I'm actually producing a program, I'm talking to these people. I'm like, can you offer this not on first day so I can go and go on it?
But are some of the, can you do these hikes though also not on first day, many of them?
Some, but you just won't get the learning that you're going to get from a guided hike.
It is nice to have a guide to point things out to you for sure.
Yeah. I find that I see things, I learn things that I never did. So there's a lot of value to be had for going with somebody who can point out those things. Plus, I find on, you know, January 1st, the sense of community, the optimism, the shared experience is really so heartwarming.
And you might make a new friend that you can go hiking with later, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, there's also opportunities to hike through some areas that have completed habitat restoration, right? Herring Brook and Wellfleet and Cold Brook and Harwich.
Yep. So there's a lot of exciting projects that are happening. They're in progress. They've been completed. They're at different stages. And it's, again, a wonderful opportunity to learn about those from people who are, you know, intimately involved with those restoration efforts and to find out why they're so important. With 14% of the land left on Cape Cod, either to preserve or develop, restoration is an important component in land conservation. And as we're looking at working lands like farms and bogs and all other kinds of lands that can be rewilded, these are great examples of success stories and why they're important to preserving the Cape's natural history and beauty.
Yeah. All right. Barnstable Land Trust has, as you mentioned, this activities for all ages at Fuller Farm. Tell us a little bit more about that thing at Fuller Farm. I know it's really popular, but what are you doing?
It is. So it continues to grow. It's one of the few events that really appeals to families and adults, but people of all ages. You know, the first year we did it at our headquarters. It wasn't great weather. I thought, oh, who's going to come out on a, you know, January 1st in the rain? It was on 6A. We had some activities, and we had over 100 people parked up and down 6A because parents, right, have kids who have been home from school. They're on school vacation.
Inside.
Right. They weren't out partying at midnight, so they're still up and at them. And people are like, we're going out no matter what. So this year we're excited because we have a lot of partners. This will be the fifth year that we do geocaching 101, which is very popular with families because it's free. And it's basically sort of using your cell phone, a nature scavenger hunt on trails. And so families love it because you can go out, find a little treasure, you sign in, you get something. The kids love it. Yeah. And it's
What kid doesn't love a treasure hunt, right?
Right. Yeah. So we have a wonderful Barnstable High School teacher who donates her morning and does an obstacle course, a training obstacle course, so that the families and the kids can do it. And we have two geocaches at Fuller Farm. We also have a small campfire where kids can do s'mores, nothing like a little sugar rush to start your morning with s'mores. We've added like hot cider and coffee for the adults. This year, Cape Cod Toy Library will be doing a station of sort of nature-based activities that kids can just explore on their own. And we've added a group of Barnstable High School students who are taking a child lit course.
Oh.
And they are putting together a story time and an activity. So we're really excited to get sort of all generations.
Yeah. Sounds like you got all your bases covered for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, does this these all of these hikes, they happen no matter what the weather is?
Some do, some don't.
So, okay.
So we always encourage people to go back to First Day Hikes Cape Cod to the website or to the individual pages, because every organization will post whether they're canceled or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, we're putting in an order right now for good weather.
Yeah.
We need that good weather. All right. Barnstable is the most developed region on the Cape. So what hikes in Barnstable are pretty special other than your the one you were just telling us about at Fuller Farm?
Fuller Farm, obviously, I'll just add an extra note about Fuller Farm. We're also launching a new loop trail off of our Fuller Farm Trail into a historic holly preserve that we just acquired a couple of years ago.
Nice.
So that'll be a new trail to open officially on January 1st. I love the short trail behind our office on 6A called Pogo Relk. It's a short walk to an observation desk, a deck overlooking a pond. You can see all kinds of wildlife there. And then there's a spur trail that goes to the end where you can see the railroad tracks and, again, the wildlife. It's unbelievable all times of year. It's gorgeous, you know, in the snow, and it's really lovely in late summer when the herons and egrets are out hundreds. It's unbelievable. Eagle Pond in Kituit is always popular. There's even a nice trail behind the Lowell Park where the Kettleers play.
Right.
So there's so many places to discover that it's really...
Cape and Islands, of course, known for its natural beauty. Most people likely envision a summer scene when they're thinking of this region. For you, what are the highlights of getting out in nature in the Cape in the winter? There are some spots that are really just magical in the winter.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's quiet, less crowded. As you've had many times on the program, the birding is amazing. We just did a winter bird walk and talk, and I learned that winter is one of the best times for birding.
Yeah, for birds we won't see in the summer.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we also, last year, launched a new comprehensive calendar of programs happening across the Cape that conservation groups are offering. And January, I just looked at the calendar, and I think even though we have a couple of May, some people have planned a little further out, there's over 50 programs up on the calendar already for the first few months of the year. So there's ways to explore nature with or without a guide, on your own or through a program.
Are dogs allowed on this? I know sometimes people like to take their dog hiking with them. So I would say some yes
some
and some no,
are,
right?
Right. Yeah. We have a free Barnstable trail map that covers just the hiking trails in the town of Barnstable. But we also use that to put where dogs on leash are allowed.
Yeah.
So some are allowed, some aren't. I don't know if I know of any that are allow dogs to just run off leash.
No. So, they have to be on a leash. Yeah. You know, I get why some people would want to let their dogs, you know, run off leash. But, you know, there's kids who are afraid of dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs get with other dogs. You get a dog fight. It's just better to keep them on a leash, right? And
absolutely.
Then you've got dogs that are reactive, and you don't want to put that dog with another dog. So what about handicap accessibility? Are any of these trails open for, you know, are they accessible for folks, for everybody?
Some, again, you have to go and check the trail, but I think we've seen a real exciting growth in accessible trails. I mean, Mass Audubon's done a great job. Harwich just opened some accessible trails. Barnstable Land Trust is working on accessible trails. I think everybody throughout the region is working to make sure at least some of their trails are accessible.
Yeah. All right, so we have all these great trails, and you know, you find one and you really like it. It's kind of your secret, right? You don't want to tell the world because you don't want everybody on your hiking trail. Do you get that a lot? Where people go, no, don't tell people about that.
We do sometimes, but it's sort of self-monitoring. A lot of these special places have limited parking. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the pro and the con. I'm always like, well, how can I get people out there? There's no place to park. But that keeps it sort of special, right? That yeah. if you have room for two or four or six cars, it's always going to limit it to how many people are going to, you know, be able to enjoy it at any one time.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the things I'm thinking about, Sue, with you is, you know, a lot of folks come into land conservation with that type of experience. You came in with a different hat, your marketing hat. You've really created some really interesting programs wearing that hat, haven't you?
I have. It's been a lot of fun to come with a different perspective to the sector. One of my favorite programs that we launched last year that we're getting ready to plan two this year was last February school vacation. We did a program called Stuffy Sleepover Glamping. And kids brought in their stuffed animals and they left them. They did a craft with them. We had an indoor tent and they left them with us overnight. And then they picked up their stuffed animals the next day. So, you know, totally stole the idea from libraries. But the kids picked up their animals. One little girl had written a story about what she thought her stuffed animal had done overnight. And we did a little film clip. It's on our YouTube channel.
Oh, that's funny.
One of our most popular YouTube videos. And it shows the stuffed animals going out in the trail and having fun being captured on a trail cam. And they're playing, you know, nature games inside and reading nature books under the stars that we created. And we had a paper campfire where they were doing s'mores. And the kids absolutely loved it. So we're doing Stuffy Sleepover Nature Superstars during this February. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do something in the summer, Stuffy Sleepover Land Steward Boot Camp.
Oh.
So, yes, so that is when the stuffed animals will ride the lawnmowers that are clearing trails and, you know, planting seeds and pulling invasives, et cetera. So we've had a lot of fun with programs like that, and so have the people who have come to it.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like you can see the kids' imagination's going wild with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so any other last spots you want to mention that we haven't talked about?
Now, I would encourage people to check out the regional calendar because I think the conservation community has really stepped up their programming and opportunity to connect people with and on the land. There's some great programs out there, some really talented people who can, you know, open your eyes to things in nature that you wouldn't have seen before. Last year, in the first year that we launched the Capewide calendar, there were over 660 programs listed by other groups. You know, like this year, I worked with somebody from Hui, a PhD student, and he did a walk on clouds. And I was like, oh, I don't know what this is going to be like. And honestly, I'll never look at a cloud the same. It was fascinating. Wow. So it really ranges no matter what you're interested in. People do arts programs, they do experiential, there's kids, there's book groups, there's all kinds of things. So I think if you care about nature on Cape Cod, you'll find some place and somehow to connect with it in a meaningful way.
All right. Sue Sullivan, who is the Director of Communications at the Barnstable Land Trust. Always, Sue, great to see you.
Thank you.
We'll post a link with a list of first day hikes scheduled for January 1st, 2026 at our website, capeandislands.org. Before we go, in June of 2023, I took a hike with Jessica Rittenauer, Executive Director of the 300 Committee in Falmouth at Shallow Pond Woodlands. The property was acquired by the 300 Committee and forever preserves significant upland, wetland, and wildlife habitat, as well as frontage along Shallow Pond and a magnificent stand of tall white pines.
Shallopon Woodlands, we're right now, I have a feeling like we're deep in the woods and we've walked, you know, a little ways on this trail, but what are we hearing? We're hearing birds. This is it feels somewhat like a wildlife sanctuary at times, but I think there's like a sense of expansiveness here, just in terms of like, I don't know, looking up and seeing the height of some of the trees, looking across the property and just knowing that we're on 70 acres. It connects to 68 acres. On the other side of the road is another 42 acres. Where else, you know, can we have these large, you know, over 100 acre properties where we could really have a sense of adventuring, exploring?
It's different too, because when you're here and you look, as you mentioned, these trees, you could almost be in a forest in Maine, right?
That's the feeling that I get when I come, you know, to properties up in this part. I mean, we're in the Hatchville section. There are, you know, the larger tracts of land. But yeah, you really have the sense of, you know, what it's like to be sort of embraced by a forested area. And it can feel really good to be in here.
The Shallopon property was on the 300 Committee's top 20 list of properties with a high priority for conservation for 20 years. It came on the market in 2017.
Looking at maps, this was a missing link between town conservation parcels that I mentioned earlier, the Breyvogel 68 acres, Waldfender 42 acres across Thomas Landers Road. The puzzle pieces come together. It's rare to have a 70-acre opportunity, so this felt like a major conservation success when we were able to pull this off.
So talk about the adjoining Breyvogel property is very different, than the Shallopon area.
Yeah. So my 7-year-old son calls it the desert. I mean, literally, it's when you go there, the landscape is so different and you are seeing, you know, what is the remains of an old gravel mining operation. That was a town purchase in the early 2000s. Carl Breyvogel, as the former owner, had created some really nice ponds and stocked them, you know, with fish. He had a beach grass planting program there. So when the town acquired that with land bank funding, there was an idea that it would be restored. Vernal pools were created there with help from Mass Audubon and our stewardship team, along with conservation department. There's a sand plain grassland restoration that we've been chipping away at for years with the town and with AmeriCorps, but a lot of effort there to, you know, create different habitats and really to help enhance, what's there, the habitat for, and I'm thinking of the bird boxes that are there, kestrels. That's a site where we really wanted to focus on, you know, the kestrel program.
Is there a cedar swamp?
Adjacent to it, the town owns a property that's 27 acres. It's tucked away behind the leaf compost facility, but it's on Town of Falmouth land, and it is an exquisite Atlantic cedar swamp that we've done a few walks there, guided walks, where we've been able to, you know, show people Breyvogel, showcase that, and then you can connect over and see the Atlantic cedar swamp. It's a really special spot.
That was Jessica Rittenour from the 300 Committee. We hope you get out and enjoy some time in nature in the coming year. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.